2 weeks from the spring election, and you're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking with the two candidates vying to be the next state superintendent of public instruction. That's Wisconsin's top education official. We last spoke with these candidates in January ahead of the primary when the field was narrowed to two. How do you feel about the State Department of Public Instruction, DPI, these days? What should be a priority for Wisconsin's next state superintendent and how the agency operates? It's 800-642-1234. So each candidate will get half of the hour, starting with Deborah Kerr, former superintendent of the Brown Deer School District in northern Milwaukee County. Deb, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's an honor to be here.
Why do you feel you're the better candidate here for state superintendent than your opponent in this race, Jill Enderle?
Well, I've dedicated the last 40 years of my life to education. I'm parochial educated and public school dedicated for the last 34 years. I've worked in all sectors. I taught in a private school. I organized a 4K charter school. And I've been a state superintendent in Wisconsin for the last 20 years. I have rural experience as an education in a small rural school in western Kenosha County, 4K through 8th grade, Wilmot Grade School, and then experience in a very urban district, Brown Deer School District, for the last 13. I also have unique experiences at the state and national level. I've been an elected president, not only for Rotary in the North Shore, but our state superintendents association, as well as our national superintendents association. And so I've had experience of working with legislators on both sides of the aisle, not only at the state capitol, but also at Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. Go ahead.
Yeah, Deb, I'm wondering, what would you do in your first days on the job? What would you set your schedule like? What would you prioritize?
Well, this is so important that we support all of our kids getting back to school. Our parents are angry and frustrated that not all of our schools are open 5 days a week. And so my team and I will be boots on the ground, making sure that we're supporting all school districts so they can reopen safely and make sure they have all the resources that they need. Because this is our moral imperative. Not all our kids are getting a high quality education right now. In fact, our Black and Brown kids are all in virtual for the most part, while the other students across the state of Wisconsin, mostly their white classmates, have been in school since September 1st. So this is deplorable that we are further exacerbating the inequities that already existed.
Well, before we talk more about achievement gaps, let's look at the pandemic. Should the state require all schools to start earlier than normal next fall to make up for learning lost during the pandemic?
Absolutely. That should be a priority. I know that each local community will need to make that decision for themselves. But I think the problem has been there's been such a lack of meaningful leadership from the local, state, and national level is that the Department of Instruction has to be an agent of change, an agent of innovation, and an agency of support. And that's not happened over the last couple of years.
What do you mean by that? And, you know, an agent of change, an agency of support. How do you do that?
Well, the Department of Public Instruction needs to become a more customer service friendly agency, not a regulatory and compliance organization. And that's been the problem over the last couple of years. We just don't have that responsiveness that our customers need and to serve all the stakeholders across Wisconsin, not just those that live in Madison. So I have a plan to decentralize the Department of Instruction so that we can be more responsive in each school district and have more of a boots on the ground approach to serving our clients.
If you're just joining us this hour, we're talking with each candidate running for state superintendent on April 6th. Now it is Deb Kerr we're talking with, former superintendent of the Brown Deer School District. What questions do you have for Deb? What do you want to know about her qualifications, her positions? How do you feel about DPI right now? What would you like to see change at the agency? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas@wpr.org. Deb, looking at funding here for a moment, should schools that do provide in-person instruction in the pandemic receive more state aid than schools that are now providing virtual or hybrid instruction?
First of all, I know that all of our teachers and our educators are working as hard as they can, but there is this perception that those people who are not in face-to-face instruction are not doing their job. And I believe it's just because there's just been this frustration that we are not all back in school when the science specifically says, and the research says that it's safe to be back in school. Our kids are not spreaders of the disease. Our school leaders and school boards have been planning all these scenarios to reopen safely. And so we need to get back to business. And so I believe that's why there's just been this frustration that we need to reopen our schools now.
Do you think that, you know, some Republicans are proposing ways to pressure schools to return to the classroom? One would require schools to pay the parents of students learning virtually. Another would limit funding for schools that don't provide the in-person instruction option. Do you support either of these ideas?
Well, again, like I said, it's really the state superintendent does not have the authority to mandate those kinds of things. But if we could just get back to school, we need to open up our schools. We have to stop letting the teachers union determine when our schools should open or not open. You know, other schools across the country have reopened. And like I said, our most vulnerable and marginalized learners are still not back face to face 5 days a week. This is a travesty.
You mentioned the powers of the superintendent. You know, in this role, you do have limited powers. You're limited. You have to work within the budget and the laws that are established by lawmakers. So how would you use this position, you know, within its powers to be able to be a change, to be a change maker?
In my first 100 days, I would meet with all the legislators and with my team to say, here's our vision to create a world-class education system that is the highest performing in the country. We need to get Wisconsin off the list of having the worst achievement gap between Black and white students across the country. I would talk about our plans, our goals, and I would want to work right away from day one on policy, on how can we move our state forward and get off that list and move to the top of that list of having high expectations and high achievement. It's going to take a lot of work, but I want to be a respected advocate in the legislature, one that they come to me for educational expertise and advisement. And I want to work collaboratively with both sides of the aisle. And that's the only way we're going to get anything done.
You're talking about this achievement gap, this terrible distinction that we lead the nation in having the largest gap between Black and white academic success. Our current state superintendent, Carolyn Stanford Taylor, says Wisconsin's achievement gap, it's a crisis. What do you see in your track record that shows you're ready to address this crisis on day one?
I'm the only candidate who's had experience of turning around a district. The Brown Deer School District is a district of 80% students of color and 50% economically disadvantaged. And we worked together to address the achievement gap. We acknowledged it. We didn't blame anyone for it. No teachers, no students, no families. And we said we can do better. And we put targeted resources and we started with reading. We got back to the basics using phonics. And that's what I would propose statewide, because right now we have 400 different ways of teaching reading across the state. And our teachers need more support in aligned resources and curriculum and assessments to make sure all kids are reading at grade level. And in Brown Deer, we did just that. Over the last 5 years, we have an increased trajectory of raising achievement, closing the achievement gap, and also having close to 100% of graduation of all students in their career in Brown Deer. And so we're very proud of that. We still have work to do, but it can be done. And the things that I did in Brown Deer can be scalable across the state.
Deb Kerr is with us, running for state superintendent, formerly superintendent of the Brown Deer School District. The spring election, by the way, is in 2 weeks. We will talk with candidate Jill Underley in the second half of this hour. What do you want to know about Deb Kerr's priorities for public education in our state? Are you an undecided voter in this race? What issues do you consider in state superintendent elections? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up with Deb Kerr in a minute here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for candidate conversations leading up to the April election. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're focusing on the two candidates who are running for state superintendent. Wisconsin's top education official oversees DPI, which manages the public school system. They set priorities in two-year budget requests. They manage the private school voucher programs, distribute grants to school districts. How do you feel about the state DPI? What would you like to see change at DPI and how it has responded to the pandemic? Join in 800-642-1234. We have candidate Deb Kerr, former superintendent of the Brown Deer School District, with us for 10 more minutes. Deb, I want to address a criticism. During your time as Brown Deer superintendent, you discovered a business manager had cost the district hundreds of thousands of dollars, lost government aid, missed bills, late tax payments. But you called this person a, quote, good steward of public funds in a recommendation letter. And your opponent has cited this case to criticize your campaign. What is your response?
I've been a superintendent for 20 years and in education for almost 40. And anyone who has experience in employment law and contracts would understand that personnel issues are very complicated. And to make these kinds of accusations are unfair. In fact, this is a criticism of my community at Brown Deer and my leadership. I would have never been a superintendent for 13 years in Brown Deer if I didn't handle that properly and working alongside with my school board. So I'm very disappointed that her team has decided to put all this money into attack ads using dark money against me. And we're using it as a way to move forward and motivate our base. And that's exactly what's happening.
Let's bring in Denise from Viroqua with a question. Hi, Denise. Go ahead.
Good morning. The question I have is, how do you plan to address the inequities in diversity in our teaching force? As a white teacher of 30 years, we are the majority. About 82% of the teachers are white females. And what is your plan to bring in and create more opportunities for teachers of color to be a part of our system? Thank you.
Thank you, Denise.
Thank you, Denise, and thank you for your 30 years of service to our children. Exactly. This is what we have to do. We have to be very intentional about recruiting teachers of color, and I did that just as Brown Deer. I tapped on the shoulder of paraprofessionals who I knew would be great teachers, and I helped them with their coursework, and we paid them during student teaching so they didn't have to quit their job to in order to get this teacher license. I also think we have a great opportunity in our high schools because teachers like you can encourage our students, the best and the brightest and our students of color, to go into the teaching pipeline. So I would like to create an academy just like the business and marketing and architecture academies that we have for career explorations in our high schools that will do just that. I also know that the UDW system is very committed to recruiting more teachers of color, and we need to do that all across the state, maybe using Educators Rising or Grow Your Own programs that are customized for each individual school district. So thank you for that question.
When you look at the funding situation, you know, you and your the other candidate support boosting state aid for special education. State Superintendent Carolyn Stanford Taylor requested a $370 million increase in the state budget. Governor Evers is proposing nearly double that amount. What amount do you support for special education?
As a former instructor of school finance, I have worked with students and aspiring superintendents to talk about this very issue. If we can get higher levels of reimbursement for special education, this could be a win-win for everyone. So higher rates of reimbursement for special education mean that we can free up money from the regular education fund to distribute to other needs or other programs. And so I don't think the state budget goes far enough. In Brown Deer, we had submitted a resolution of 90% reimbursement to our legislature for their consideration. So if you look at the history of the state, they have fallen short of their commitment to two-thirds funding for special education. And I would like to see more at 90%. And so as the next state superintendent, I would work over the next couple biennial budgets to get to that point so that we can serve our most vulnerable and marginalized learners.
Yeah, I mean, can you translate that? what would two-thirds funding mean for schools, mean for school districts across the state?
Well, the state has always made this commitment, but for some reason they've fallen short. And I do understand that we have to balance what we can afford. But I also think as the next state superintendent, I want to do an equity audit. I want to make sure we're spending the money in the right places, because sometimes just investing more money doesn't get the outcomes that we're expecting or aspiring to. And so I want to make sure that we have set metrics using the money in the best ways possible to get our return on investment.
We're talking with each of the candidates running for state superintendent on April 6th. Deb Kerr is a former superintendent of the Brown Deer School District. We'll talk with candidate Jill Underly next. You can join in. What decisions by our state superintendent have you supported or disagreed with? Are you an undecided voter? What do you need to know before casting a ballot? 800-642-1234. Deb, you talk about balancing what we can afford, especially in the area of special education. Do you support increasing aid for schools if that would mean, you know, raising sales taxes or raising income or other state tax collections?
I think it's important that we realize that this legislature wants educational reform, but also they want to keep the taxes low. And so we've got to balance that. And so we've got to make sure we're putting the money in the right places to serve everyone, all the stakeholders in Wisconsin. And so I don't want to just ask for additional money without the promise of how we're going to get better outcomes, because that's been the problem. We can't just throw money at the achievement gap without having a plan, a strategic plan on how we're going to get better outcomes. And my literacy roadmap will do just that when we invest in teaching the basics of phonics and making sure that all kids have opportunity for growth and improvement.
So I would assume that then reading and literacy would be an area, a categorical aid area, you know, that would be a high priority for you as you look across the board at where you would put your dollars.
Absolutely. And I would work closely with the legislature to provide incentives in policy that would help people decide, well, do I want to do this or not? Because there are some wonderful reading programs going on across the state, and there are some school districts getting great results, but the majority of the kids are not winning in the area of literacy.
What would incentives and policy look like to you?
Well, one of the ideas we can learn from other states like Mississippi and Florida, who have a very high upward trajectory of achievement for all the kids that they're serving in their states. And so that could look like instructional coaches, more high quality training, not only for teachers, but for principals and superintendents. And it's going to take some time, but we need high quality resources and we need alignment of practices to be successful.
In terms of early childhood education, what is your vision for 4K? How would it be funded?
I love early childhood. We all know the investment in early childhood pays off tremendously in the long run. I've been able to start 2 4-year-old kindergarten programs, both at Wilmot Grade School and at Brown Deer. And we need to provide as many opportunities, birth to 3, and then from 3 to 3rd grade, especially in the area of literacy. But we need to make sure all of our kids are being taken care of, their social emotional needs, their mental health needs, that they're being fed well. And so this is going to require partnerships with local organizations such as Boys and Girls Club, YMCAs, local churches, high quality before and after school programs. So it's not just a school district approach, it's a village approach, because our schools are the centerpiece of our communities and we're going to need to work together to recover from this pandemic.
Let's talk about the private school choice programs, the 4 separate private school voucher programs. Your opponent, Jill Underly, wants to freeze enrollment in the programs. And you've talked about evaluating vouchers, bringing people to the table to talk. But what is your end goal on whether the private school voucher program should expand, should stay the same, should stop? Where are you at?
I trust parents. I believe that all parents should have the liberty to choose their own circumstances. And I think my opponent is being very disingenuous. She sent her children to private schools, and then she wants some of my Black and Brown parents not to have those same choices in their local neighborhoods when they don't feel their public schools are adequate. And so, again, this is a 40-year-old problem. Let's put it in the rearview mirror. Let's try to work together to build some consensus, because I think it's possible. We need to figure out the question should be, how can we offer high quality education for all students in the state of Wisconsin? And then what does that look like? What does accountability mean? What are those metrics? And then how do we pay for it? And I think that needs to be the leading question, is the how do we get a high quality education for all kids in the state of Wisconsin? Because if we're going to create a world-class education system, we that is the highest performing in the country, we need to all be on the same page. High tides raise all boats.
Deb, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor, and I hope that the voters make an informed choice. If you look at my resume, I have all the qualifications and am uniquely prepared for this job. I want us to get back to school.
Deb Kerr is former superintendent of the Brown Deer School District. She's campaigning for state superintendent of public instruction on April 6th. Just ahead, our candidate conversations continue with Jill Underley. What do you want to know about her priorities, her qualifications or positions? What decisions by our state superintendent have you supported or disagreed with? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for candidate conversations leading up to the April spring election. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. So we're focusing on the race for superintendent of public instruction. Voters narrowed the field down to two in the February primary. And we just spoke with candidate Deb Kerr. Now we have candidate Jill Underley on the line, superintendent of the Pecatonica Area School District. That's about 20 miles southwest of Madison. What do you want to know about her priorities for public schools in our state? It's 800-642-1234. Jill, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much, Kate. I'm excited to be here this morning.
Why do you feel you're the better candidate for state superintendent than your opponent in this race, Deb Kerr?
Yeah, I've been a leader in the state, by offering full-day, high-quality preschool and childcare to all families. Because we know that high quality preschool helps kids perform better in school and helps families who struggle with childcare costs. And, I've safely led my school district through the pandemic this past year, and I've had our schools opened since September. We gave parents an option, and that worked really well. They got to choose between in-person as well as virtual, and just working really hard, and as a parent of two right now, who are in middle school, I get it. I know how critical it is for our kids to be in school as well as for our workforce and our economy. So I think I'm the right person right now at the right time.
What would be your first days on the job like? What would you prioritize?
Yeah, there's a ton of priorities right now. So it's a tall order. Certainly making sure that our schools have the resources they need to open their doors come September 1st. Maybe even working to remove that September start date so that locally district leaders can say we want to open up earlier. But then making sure, again, they have the resources that they can use to have after-school programming, enrichment, as well as remediation opportunities for kids, because our kids and our families missed out on so much this past year.
Do you think the state should require all schools to start earlier than normal next fall to make up for the learning loss in the pandemic?
I'm not in favor of requiring that, and I'll tell you why. I've talked to parents because, that's what I do as a superintendent currently. A lot of them want their kids to have a normal summer, but I do feel that if that's what they want to have locally, they should work with their school boards and their district leaders to make that happen.
What should in-person classes look like for schools? Should schools that provide in-person learning receive more state funding than schools that are providing virtual or hybrid instruction?
I think that's really one of those questions that on the surface sounds like a great idea, but honestly, when you kind of go below the surface, it really opens up questions about equity. The schools that are open right now are the rural schools. They're primarily white. They have the resources. Maybe they have smaller class sizes already, so they're able to socially distance, and they have the PPE, and, they have perhaps, more resources in that regard. Whereas in the communities, especially communities of color, where we have larger schools and we have crowded classrooms and probably outdated buildings and HVAC systems,
you know, that's why they're closed. The buildings are closed. And there's certainly expenses, you know, associated with virtual learning, such as technology. So I think, you know, we'd have to really question what the motivations are behind that.
Kelly from Oshkosh called in, couldn't stay with us. And Kelly wonders, you know, what you feel is the overall goal of public education in Wisconsin?
Yeah, the overall goal is that every child should have access to a great public education. I mean, this is the solid foundation for our democracy. It's the cornerstone in our communities so that kids can, you know, for the rest of their lives, have that foundation to thrive. And that's really why I'm running.
School choice advocates say you're hypocritical because you champion public schools, but you did pay to enroll your kids in private school while you lived in Madison. What is your response to that?
Yeah, I had to chuckle actually when I heard that because it was so long ago, and I think it's misleading, to be honest. I sent my kids to a full-day private preschool and full-day, full-week 4K and 5K because it was also childcare and it was wraparound care, and my public school didn't offer it. So I made sure that when I became superintendent and my kids were now in elementary, we started here at Pecatonica when my daughter was in first grade. I made sure to bring those programs to my public school. So all kids have it here at my school now. And I brought it to Pecatonica because I didn't have that as a parent.
What exactly is your vision for 4K? I mean, you hugely support it. You want to expand it, but how do you fund it?
Yeah, you know, we've been finding that you can fund it. And right now we certainly get reimbursed for 60%. If we got reimbursed more, that would be great. But a lot of programs offer half-day programs, and they offer that transportation in the middle of the day. We found that by eliminating the transportation and by, you know, having the full-day program, full week, but just the transportation savings were enough to allow us to hire another teacher so we could offer it full-day, full week.
So you're saying, you know, look at other areas of spending and see if you can make up that difference by putting it in toward a full day program. Would you be able to do that at all schools across the state?
I think so. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Yes, I think we can, because when you look at it, it builds up our kids and it helps them have that great foundation for elementary school and they're on a path to academic success. We also found that we were retaining kids in our schools. They were not open enrolling out for childcare. And so we had that savings too in our open enrollment out numbers.
This hour, we're talking with each candidate running for state superintendent on April 6th. Jill Underley is with us, superintendent of the Pecatonica Area School District. You can join in. What decisions by the state superintendent have you supported? What do you want to see more of with DPI? How do you feel about how the Department of Public Instruction is doing now amid the pandemic? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We heard from Sarah in Mequon, called in, couldn't stay with us. Sarah is a teacher and wonders how you would approach the teacher shortage. How will you attract more teachers, specifically teachers of color?
Yeah, that's a challenge. And, you know, as a person who's hiring teachers all the time, I know and I believe in the fact that we need highly trained, passionate, and compassionate teachers in our profession. So I look forward to working with our teachers groups as well as with our schools and colleges of education and our school boards, because at the end of the day, we all want the same things, right? We want really great teachers because they equal great schools. You know, as far as attracting and retaining, I mean, we have to look at teacher salary. And I know that's really kind of a testy subject, but we really need to pay people what they're worth, you know, for their education and their knowledge and their skills and their abilities. You know, the profession lags about 20% behind in income from other similar careers. But we also need to look at the structure of our teaching day. We need to make sure that we have school-based professional development. We need to support teachers. And, you know, when we look at staff and student of color, I mean, we need to be intentional. We need to make sure that students and staff of color need to be safe and they need to feel welcome in their schools, because we know that a lot of people currently don't. And so, you know, when we look at diversity, it'll benefit everybody, and it'll especially benefit the academic achievement of our Black and Brown students.
Well, let's look at that achievement gap. You know, Wisconsin leading the nation and having the largest gap between Black and white academic success. Our current state superintendent, Carolyn Stanford Taylor, says Wisconsin's achievement gap is a crisis. What in your track record shows that you're ready to address this crisis on day one?
Yeah, you know, and I guess, you know, when I look at it, Carolyn is spot on. I mean, it is a crisis, but we have to look at it also from the perspective that these are opportunity gaps, and these are gaps that are based on the fact that where you live determine your opportunities, and the kids with more opportunities will have better achievement. I mean, just look at the higher poverty communities. They're going to have lower test scores. You know, wealthier communities will have better test scores. And I want all our communities to have great, you know, opportunities for their kids. So regardless of our zip codes, our kids need to get a world-class education here in Wisconsin. So when you look at the gaps, these existed before the pandemic. Certainly they've been exacerbated during and after. But I think we should also acknowledge that, you know, we need to expand preschool for everyone, like I did at Pecatonica. We need to invest in the programs we know that will work. And in our higher poverty communities where we have higher gaps, preschool will help. And it also provides high-quality childcare, setting kids up for success. We also need to look at recruitment and retention of high-quality teachers in all our schools. We need more fair and equitable school finance that works for all public schools in Wisconsin. And we need to attack the problems that, you know, are rooted in generational poverty. We need to provide, you know, whatever it takes for kids, you know, whether it's meals, whether it's health care, whether it's mental health care. I mean, we need to improve our facilities. I mean, there's so many things that we need to do in Wisconsin. But, you know, because this has been a long, long lived problem, and we need to end it.
Yeah, so competing priorities, you want to invest in programs that work, but do you support increasing aid for schools if that would mean raising sales taxes or income taxes or other tax collections in the state?
Yeah, I think we certainly need to look at different revenue streams. We can't always put the burden on our taxpayers. When you look at the number of referendums that are being passed, every time a referendum is passed in our communities, the school funding formula becomes more unequal and it becomes more broken. So, yeah, we do need to look at different revenue. You know, those are options for sure. I mean, other states have, you know, entirely different revenue streams, you know, luxury taxes, for example. I mean, there's certain things we could look at, you know, interest from state forests. I think there's a lot of possibilities, but we need to do something. We need to get more resources to the schools and the kids that need it the most.
We're talking with Jill Underle, who is superintendent of the Pecatonica Area School District, running for state superintendent of public instruction. The spring election is 2 weeks from now. And we talked with candidate Deb Kerr in the first half of the hour. What do you want to know about Jill Underle's priorities for public education in our state? What issues matter most to you for Wisconsin's next schools chief? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our candidate conversations. 2 weeks from the spring election now, the state superintendent or the next school superintendent takes over at a trying time. Schools are delivering a mix of in-person and virtual instruction, learning loss in the pandemic, the racial achievement gap, as we've been talking about, and competing resources among rural and urban districts. We're talking about all these issues with both candidates. What's on your mind as well? Are you an undecided voter in this election? What do you want to know before casting a ballot? 800-642-1234. Candidate Jill Underle is superintendent of the Pecatonica Area School District, and she's with us for 10 more minutes. Diane is joining us from Iron County with a question. Hi, Diane. Go ahead.
Hi. I taught for like 30 years, and I've looked at this. The countries with the highest achieving schools have a much different work day for the teachers. The contact time between the teacher and the student is much less. We would get 47 minutes a day. I taught four different types of science and I had to do everything within that 47 minutes, assess, lesson planning, parent contact, individual student help, collaboration with other teachers during that 47 minutes, whereas other countries, the teachers get, I think, about 40% of their daily time to do these things.
Diane, thank you. Jill, how would you address this prep time and this crunch?
Yeah, it's tough. And I'll be honest, rural teachers have it tough. I mean, like Diane said, she was a science teacher. And in some school districts, she may have been the only science teacher at the high school. And so there she, you know, was teaching not just biology, but chemistry, physics, environmental science, as well as any electives they may offer. And it's tough. You know, you wear a lot of hats. You certainly are the point of contact for all the parents as well in science. And so, you know, we need to look at how we can get more individuals in front of our kids. In our rural communities, you know, they may have smaller class sizes, but they are certainly stretched. And I know as a superintendent of a rural community, but the challenges are very similar also in urban communities. We've got larger class sizes. And so those teachers, maybe if they are only teaching the same subject all day, they still have really large caseloads. You know, and Diane's accurate, you know, when you look at other countries, they have different, you know, days, the days are structured differently for school. And it's not as overwhelming, I think, for kids, but it's also not one of those insurmountable professions, I think, for the adults too. So I would love to look at it. I'd love to look at additional structures, you know, how we can structure our school day, how we can get more staff. But again, that takes more funding.
What about year-round school? Where are you at with that?
I'm a fan. You know, I'll be honest. There's a couple states that I'm aware of that are currently doing year-round schools. I think in many cases, they make it like a local option, you know, where the school board decides to do it. But, you know, I think it's a good idea, and I think it's worth exploring, especially for our elementary aged kids, when parents need that summer, you know, for their kids to have, you know, to be engaged. And we can look at how that would reduce the summer, quote, slide, you know, in achievement. So I think it's worth it. You know, I think it's worth exploring.
Diane, thanks. Linda is now with us from Pewaukee. Hi, Linda. Go ahead.
Good morning. I was wondering if the candidate could address the importance of and her views on the outdoor classroom. Thank you.
It's a great question, Linda. Thanks for asking that. I'm a big fan of outdoor education. I see how much of a positive impact that has on our health and our mental health, not just for our kids, but also for our adults. So certainly it's something that I feel all schools should have an option, you know, for them to have outdoor spaces so that they could teach outside. But we also have at my school, school gardens. I know lots of schools have school forests. You know, like our agricultural classes often have like fields that they use for trials. I think it's a hugely important aspect of a well-rounded education.
Where are you at on school consolidation? Wisconsin has more than 400 school districts. Should the state provide financial incentives to help school districts consolidate?
I know in the past, the state of Wisconsin has offered at least, you know, research funding or, you know, if they were going to explore consolidation. And I don't think that's a bad idea at all. I do feel that our schools do need some more options if that's what they want to do and they locally decide by their school board that that's what they want to do. I look back at Palmyra Eagle and I just feel that was handled so poorly. You know, it was currently a local, I mean, it was a local decision that that's what they wanted to pursue, but rural schools really don't have many options. You know, certainly, we should have options if our communities want to go with a K-8 building, for example, and keep the local village school and then maybe have a unified high school. But that's currently not an option for our rural schools. So I think that's worth exploring, you know, working with the legislature to provide opportunities for our communities to keep open their rural school, but also look for more opportunities for their high school kids.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with the two candidates in the race for state superintendent on April 6th. We have Jill Underle with us now, superintendent of the Pecatonica Area School District. We talked with Deb Kerr earlier this hour. What questions do you have for Jill Underle? What do you want to know about her qualifications, her positions? How do you feel the state DPI, Department of Public Instruction, is doing as an agency? 800-642-1234. Jill, you know, the state superintendent has limited powers. You have to work within the budget, the laws established by lawmakers. So how would you wield the superintendent's powers to bring about change?
Yeah, that's a great point, Kate, because really they don't have a ton of legislative powers. That actually, the only powers they have are really through educator licensing, and, you know, working with our schools and colleges of education. But as far as legislation goes, the state superintendent and that office can recommend policies. They can do some research, and they can also testify and encourage and advocate, you know, for different policies. But I also feel that, you know, when you look at the position historically, there have been some state superintendents who have been able to wield that power statewide of influence. And, you know, I look at Dr. Bert Grover, for example. He was one of the most well-known, I hate to use the word politician for state superintendent, but that's really what it is, politicians in the state. And he was known because he was constantly communicating about what was best for kids and sharing statewide, you know, policies that would impact kids positively. And that's what I would like to do, too. I would like to have more transparency with the State Department of Public Instruction, but also, you know, communicating widely throughout our communities about what we're doing and the great things public schools are doing and what we know works in our public schools.
Let's talk about the private school choice programs, the four separate private school voucher programs. You've suggested phasing out the state's voucher program. If the program is a drain on public schools and their students, as you say, why not eliminate vouchers now?
Yeah, it's tough. I don't want to ever take away something that a kid currently has, right? So, for example, with the vouchers, there's lots of kids in the voucher program, and I wouldn't take away a voucher from them. But I do feel that we should put a freeze on the enrollment. The program is only expanding, and then in 2024, the caps come off entirely. And right now, the program costs $380 million a year just for vouchers. And when you look again at the long-term impacts that this is having on our public schools, our facilities are crumbling. Our teachers' pay isn't increasing. We've got extra demands on our schools, and they're not getting the funding for it. You have to wonder why. So in the long term, we can't afford two public school systems, and we need to make sure that every child has access to a quality education in a public school every day.
You're endorsed by the State Teachers Union that opposes mm-hmm. Act 10. Governor Walker and other supporters of Act 10 say repealing the law would place too much power with unions instead of elected officials. What is your response to that?
Well, I think we have to look at the impact of Act 10 and how public education was revered in Wisconsin and nationally in Wisconsin prior to Act 10. Mm-hmm. Act 10 cut $1 billion from our schools in 2011. It was $600 per kid. And you look at that impact over year after year after year, that was an additional $4 billion in the last decade. And we really struggle in, you know, funding our schools. And we basically had a governor and a legislature that balanced their budget shortfall on the back of our kids. And we struggle now recruiting and retaining teachers because of the cuts to pay and benefits. And again, when we talk about teachers, they are the most important component in that classroom when it comes to instructing our kids and student achievement. We need to make sure that they're high quality, passionate educators, and Act 10 damaged the teaching profession.
Jill, thank you for joining us.
You bet. I had a lot of fun. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Jill Underle is superintendent of the Pecatonica Area School District in the southwestern part of the state. Earlier, we talked with her opponent, Deb Kerr, former superintendent of Brown Deer School District. The election is on April 6th. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.